I want to take the opportunity to start off by thanking Shlomo Hershey and everyone at the Kol Torah Kula WhatsApp group, Yasher Koach, for organizing this and all of your other shiurim. Keep doing the great things. Keep on doing the amazing things. Thank you so much. And, of course, I'm happy to have been invited. I also want to take this opportunity to thank an anonymous sponsor of the shiur. The shiur is being sponsored in the schus of a shidduch bekarov for Rivka Bas Elkachana, Imirta Hashem. Okay, wanted to talk in the time that we have this evening, or this afternoon, depending on where you are, about a theme that runs through Pesach and our Geula and the redemption from Mitzrayim. It got us into the mess and hopefully, and got us out. And hopefully that will serve as a framework and a template for something that we can connect to for this Pesach. And please God, hopefully get us out of some of our current challenges and troubles at the moment. If I asked you to consider for a moment, how did it all begin? How did the entire problem of the Golus Mitzrayim, all of the problems that we needed to get ourselves out of, everything that we're celebrating, not only at the Seder, but throughout Pesach, how did we get in the mess to begin with? What was the source of all the problem? In fact, this is not just a curiosity of a question, but it's a very specific one that relates at least to the Haggadah and the Seder, because as you probably all recall from previous years, one of the halachos that relates to the structure of the Seder is maskil bignus u'mesayim b'shvach, that there is a emphasis in the Seder on Pesach to not only celebrate how the story ended, but to understand how the story started, how we got into the mess in the first place. And while there are different opinions in Chazal, and our Haggadah reflects both of those opinions in terms of how far back one has to go, but the truth is that there's a very incredible chiddush that I want to share with you that I don't think is well known, that in fact there is kind of a hidden character and a hidden theme in the actual Seder. And that is, let me ask you the following question. We have Karpas. It's one of the things that is the beginning of the Seder. Kadesh Orchatz, Karpas is the third of the sections of the Seder. And we know what you do during Karpas. You take a kind of a vegetable, something that's the Borei Pri HaAdama, and you dip it into salt water. But that's not what the word Karpas means. It doesn't mean potato. It doesn't mean celery or leek or any of the other different things that people use. It's a very, very rare and peculiar word choice, Karpas. What exactly does that mean? So there is a commentary on the Rambam, depending on which versions of the Rambam you have in Mishneh Torah, some of them, like the Frankel Rambam, include this on the page, called Rabbeinu Manoach. And the Rabbeinu Manoach has a tremendous chiddush. He says that Karpas is from a lashon of the Kesones Pasim. We know that when Yaakov was raising his 12 sons, at the time 11, he had a special love for, and unfortunately we know a favoritism of Yosef. And a way of showing that favoritism and that love is he gave Yosef the famous coat of many colors, the Kesones Pasim. Kesones, of course, means the clothing, but Pasim is a fine wool. We know that even Chur v'Karpas, it's a term that's used even in Megillas Esther, referring to a fine wool. And that was the type of clothing that Yosef's coat was, that the one that Yaakov gave him. So says Rabbeinu Manoach, when we say that we have Karpas at the Haggadah, Karpas at the Seder, he says, why are we doing that? Noagin b'Karpas, Zecher l'kesones ha-pasim sh'asa Yaakov avinu li-Yosef. Whoever thought of that, right? Who would ever have thought of that on their own? I certainly would have thought of that on my own. Says Rabbeinu Manoach, a tremendous chiddush, that the Karpas, I was about to say that we know and love, but I don't know how many people truly love Karpas, but certainly that we know, the Karpas that we know from our Seders every single year, that, says Rabbeinu Manoach, is in commemoration, it's a zecher, for what happened with Yosef, the Kesones Pasim that Yaakov gave him. And that is not just about the coat, it's a demonstrative symbol of the very act of the whole story between Yaakov and Yosef, and then, of course, the brothers. And the Rebbeinu Menachem continues, and he says, why are we out of nowhere in the beginning of the Seder, the story, the evening that's celebrating the culmination of our Exodus, our Yetzias Mitzrayim, and our Geula? What does that have to do with Yosef, something that took place so many years even before that? So says Rebbeinu Menachem, why are we remembering Yaakov and Yosef and the brothers and the coat? B'sibasa nisgagel hadavar v'yiktu avoseinu l'mitzrayim. Says Rebbeinu Menachem, if you want to know where it all started, it didn't start in Egypt. It started way before then. How did they get to Egypt in the beginning? They got to Egypt because of the divisiveness, the lack of unity, and the jealousy that existed between the brothers each as a group, and the brothers, unfortunately, with their hatred for Yosef. That jealousy was exacerbated and certainly symbolized, says Rebbeinu Menachem, by the special coat that Yaakov gave his son. And therefore, as part of our Seder ritual and the experience that we have every year at the Seder, says Rebbeinu Menachem, we have Karpas to remind us of the coat that Yaakov gave Yosef, the coat that was dipped in the blood, and the sinas chinam and the divisiveness and the hatred among Jews, among a family that eventually led to Yosef going into Mitzrayim, which eventually led to the Golus, which then, Baruch Hashem, eventually ended with an exodus with the Geula, which we celebrate at the Seder. But the point is that we are being told and focused by this particular ritual as a trigger, to use a modern term. We talk a lot in today's culture about triggers. Well, this is an intentional, positive trigger, says Rebbeinu Menachem. We do this towards the beginning of the Seder to remind us that it all started. It all started with the Sinas Chinam, unfortunately, that took place between the brothers and each other and Yosef. And that is really a theme. We got into this mess because of a lack of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro and a lack of true Avas Yisrael or Avas Achim. This terrible behavior which existed between the brothers continued in Egypt itself. You may recall right in the beginning of the story, in the beginning of Sefer Shmos, so after Moshe has already saved the Jew who's being beaten by the Egyptian taskmaster and killed him. And then, of course, the Torah also tells us that Moshe sees two Jews fighting, and Moshe tries to stop them, and they get very upset, and they yell at Moshe, are you going to do to us what you did to the Egyptian? And Moshe says very faithfully, Achein noda hadavar. Indeed, it is now known. It was known. The matter is known. So, of course, on a simple pshat level, what that means is that the fact that I killed the Egyptian is known, the secret is out, I'm in trouble. However, on a deeper level, Rashi quotes from Chazal that Moshe was being bothered, was actually alluding to a different problem. Why are the Jews in this mess to begin with? Why are they being enslaved? Why has Moshe not, has HaKadosh Baruch Hu not redeemed them and saved them? So says Rashi, this is again a Rashi Ala Torah, we all have seen it before and certainly have easy access to it. So Rashi, Perek Beis, Pasuk Gedalet and Shmos, Rashi says that Moshe was bothered by this. And when he saw the way the Jews were reacting to him, and the fact that apparently the Jews have been gossiping and talking about him behind his back, and that's how word had spread about what he did to the Egyptian, Achein noda hadavar, says Moshe. Now I know why we got into this mess, and unfortunately why HaKadosh Baruch Hu has not redeemed us, why we are still in this mess. Because the Jewish people are the type of people that would tattletale on each other, that would talk behind each other's back, that would gossip about each other, and that would even put each other's life at risk. If this is the type of disunity, this is the type of Lashon Hara, says Rashi, this is the type of Sinas Chinam that exists between the Jews, then Achein Noda Hadavar. Now I understand how they got into this mess and why HaKadosh Baruch Hu has not redeemed them yet. I saw many years ago in one of the commentaries, one of the sichos of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, where he asked the question, it's bad to speak Lashon Hara, it's bad that people gossiped against Moshe, but since when is that something so severe that you'd punish them with servitude in Mitzrayim and the terrible death and destruction and pain and deprivation that occurred to the Jewish people when they were in Mitzrayim? Why is that something that deserved it? And the Lubavitcher Rebbe, as I recall, explained, it wasn't an onesh, it wasn't a punishment as much as it was a cosmic or a metaphysical reality. It was a metzius. If the Jewish people are divided, if there's divisiveness, if there's sinas chinam, then there simply isn't a entity called Am Yisrael or called the Jewish people that would be able to summon the collective merit, the collective or group zechuyos, to make them worthy of being saved. Every one of us, if the spotlight would be just on us, you know, how many of us, myself certainly first among, who could stand up to the spotlight of HaKadosh Baruch Hu just looking at us? We hope, just like we say whenever we make a Misha Berech, right? B'so Shar Chole Yisrael, right? We always try to include ourselves in the tzibur. That's why all of our tfilos and Shemon Esrei are always in plural, as the Gemara Brachos says, to connect us to the tzar, to the needs of the greater Jewish people. So if we have a metzias, a reality of a unified people, then we can all connect and we could be judged as a people, as a nation, and then hopefully merit it. Acheinu dehadavar. However, once Moshe realized, says Lubavitcher Rebbe, that the people weren't really a people at all. They were just a collection of individuals, each one out for themselves. They were in a desperate situation, which certainly challenges things, but they didn't rise to the occasion. They were being personally selfish, only worrying about themselves, gossiping about each other, not unified. And that reality, that metzias, made them incapable and not being able to merit Hashem's extra hashkacha. If this is how we got into the mess, it started off with the divisiveness of Yosef. If Moshe sees that the divisiveness and Lashon Hara and scandal still existed in the time when they were in Egypt, now we can hopefully understand, as we pivot, how the Jews got out of Mitzrayim. If we know how they got into the mess, we can now hopefully understand how they were able to and would be able to get out of the mess. The pasuk in Shmos, a little bit later on there, also in the second perek, in Perek Beis, pasuk Vav, even earlier, when we talk about Moshe, little baby Moshe, whose parents and family tried to save him by putting him in that little basket and floating him down the Nile. So the pasuk very famously tells us that Tiftach v'tirehu es hayeled v'hine hana'ar bocha. When the princess, when Bas Paro was at the Nile with her maidens, she notices the boy, the yeled, v'hine hana'ar bocha, and the lad, the na'ar, is crying. And many mefarshim note that there's a seemingly inconsistency or a contrast in the pasuk itself. Because in halacha and in pshat and chumash, a yeled, a boy, is not the same as a na'ar. A na'ar is somebody who's older, slightly more mature. A yeled is really a younger person or a baby. So how could Moshe in the same pasuk be referred to as both a yeled and a na'ar? Bas Paro sees the yeled and the na'ar is crying. What is going on? So there are all sorts of different explanations to this. But an incredible one, an unforgettable one, is offered by the Baal HaTurim. The Baal HaTurim, as some of you may know, was one of the Rishonim, and the Baal HaTurim has a very known, the author is known more for his halachic works, but also has a book on Chumash, a commentary on Chumash, which is quite ingenious, but of a particular genre and style, and that he must have been a math genius. I'm sure he did very well in math when he was a kid in school, because he comes up with the most creative and ingenious gematrias. But he uses those not just to be clever, but he uses those, and obviously he had a mathematical mind. He probably thought in numbers more than many people do, certainly more than I do, but he uses those inventive and creative gematrias in order to illustrate incredible and profound points. So in this particular case, says the Baal Torim amazingly, he completely rereads the pasuk, he revolutionizes our understanding of the pasuk. He says that the word that's being referred to in the pasuk, it's a gematria of Ze Aaron HaKohen. That this phrase of Na'ar Bocha is actually the same gematria as Ze Aaron HaKohen. Hana'ar Bocha is the same gematria as this is Aaron. Now what does he mean by that? What he means to say is something incredible, that the pasuk is actually referring to not the same person, not Moshe only, exclusively, but in this very pasuk, within a few short words, there's a transition between Moshe and his brother Aaron. Let's read the pasuk again in light of the Baal HaTurim. The Tiftach v'tir'ehu es hayeled. Bas Paro notices baby Moshe in the water. V'hine na'ar bocha. And then the Na'ar, Aaron HaKohen, the older brother Aaron, is crying. Now this is an incredible insight. Many of us have learned since we're young kids that while Moshe was hiding off, was floating down the river, We know in the story we're told that Miriam, the older sister, was watching to see what happened. And that's when Miriam was able to jump in when the baby was crying and Vasparo couldn't nurse. That's already Pshat and Chumash. The Baal HaTurim has an amazing original Chiddush that it wasn't just Miriam who was watching, it was also Aaron. Aaron was watching the whole time his younger brother. And Aaron, as he sees his younger brother just floating down the river, completely vulnerable, hoping to stay hidden. And now all of a sudden he's not hidden anymore because Bas Paro, the princess, is coming. If you were Aaron and you see the princess of Egypt, Bas Paro, coming to find your baby brother in the Nile, what would you expect to happen? After all, isn't there a decree to drown all the babies? You would expect that you would have been petrified that Bas Paro is about to drown your brother. And Aaron is crying because he's worried about his brother. So the pasuk says that Bas Paro first notices Moshe in the water, and then he nay na'ar bocha ze gamatria Aaron a kohen, that refers to Aaron crying. Now, if we understand that, now we can take it to the next step. What's the implication of the pasuk? It's an incredible thing, because how does the pasuk conclude? Vatachma alav, she had mercy on Moshe. Vatomer, and she said, Miyalde ha'ivrim zeh. This is a Jewish baby. Now again, if we were just reading simple pshat in the Chumash, which is certainly correct, how did she know all of a sudden this baby is Jewish? How does she know to declare with such certainty that this baby floating in the river is Jewish? So the simple answer in the Pashup Shot is, because of course he's Jewish. Who else would have a baby floating in the river? You didn't have to be Sherlock Holmes to deduce the fact that that's why the baby was there, in order to save the baby. That's Pashup Shot, perhaps. But in light of the Baal HaTurim, there's a completely different interpretation of the Pasuk. She sees the baby, Vehine Nar Bocha, and then she hears somebody else crying, someone who's hiding in the thicket, someone who's standing on the banks of the river, and someone else is crying. Says the Baal HaTurim, in essence, when she saw Moshe and she noticed that Aaron was crying, that's how she knew it was a Jewish baby. Because when it comes to the Jewish people, we cry not only for ourselves, but we cry for each other and for other people. Our cries aren't just selfish, even in the best sense of the word. They're not only self-involved when we are suffering, when we are in pain. We cry even for other people's pain. We have the capacity of Imo Anochi Betzara to be so empathetic to someone else's pain, we can even cry for somebody else. And says the Baal HaTurim, only when she saw the Na'ar Bocha, that someone was crying for somebody else, somebody cared enough to be waiting and watching the whole time, somebody cares enough to be crying, worried about this baby, then she says, Miyalde Ivrim Zeh. Because evidently, at least there was some, even if the overall Jewish people at the time didn't have that capacity to be thinking and caring about each other, already at least within the family of Moshe and Aaron and Miriam, there already was that capacity. The seed of the future Geula, of actually not being selfish and being disloyal and having a lack of unity, but in fact caring about each other and loving each other truly like brothers and sisters, that already existed, and that was evidence to Bas Paro, Miyalde Ha'ivrim Zeh. This is a theme which continues throughout the story and the career of Moshe. So for example, also again later there in the beginning of Sefer Shmos, one of the very first things, if not the first thing that we're told about Moshe actively doing, Moshe doing himself, is that Moshe went out, Vayar Visivlo Sam, and he saw the Jews suffering in the pyramids, in the slave pits. And Rashi very famously says, Nasan Einav Velibo Lihios Meitzar Aleihem. Not only did Moshe notice them, which is itself a chiddush. Let's be honest, how often do we walk down the street? There's all sorts of poverty to the left, to the right, in front of us, behind us, and very often we walk without even, you know, walk outside and or go to our own shuls and our own communities, and we don't necessarily even Nasan Einav. We don't always even notice the struggles and the poverty around us. But Moshe not only noticed that, despite being a prince who had every privilege in at the time, he'd already been adopted and being raised in the palace, but not only Nasan Einav, but Nasan Libo Lios Meitzar Aleihem. He truly, genuinely felt their pain. We see what was already evidenced with Moshe as a baby, with Aaron and Miriam while they were watching him. So Moshe, intuitively or somehow through osmosis, miraculously, metaphysically, Moshe had this characteristic as well. Furthermore, in the third parak of Sefer Shmos, a little while later, as the story is progressing, when Moshe has already had to run away, he's a shepherd from Midian for his father-in-law Yisro, and he's in the desert shepherding his sheep, when all of a sudden he sees this miraculous prophetic vision where the snet is burning, the brush is burning, but it's not being consumed. So when he finally notices this and Hashem starts speaking to him through the snet, in that case Hashem tells him, Sha'al nalecha me'al raglecha, take your shoes off, ki admas kodesh hu, because this is holy land, holy ground. What made it holy? And why did he have to take off his shoes? It's in the middle of the Sinai Desert. What's holy about that land? It's nothing. And why was he taking off his shoes for to begin with? Every time a Navi got a prophecy or something, he had to take off his shoes? What's going on? So the first and founding Ger Rebbe, the Chiddush Harim, explains in a very deep way, homiletically, al Pidrush, as follows. Moshe was about to be tasked with being the leader who was going to redeem the Jewish people and take them out of Egypt. But one could obviously and reasonably understand if the people were not exactly convinced or willing to follow Moshe's lead so easily. After all, what does he know about their pain, right? We know this in general in politics and certainly in the current crisis, right? It's a human nature for us to have a desire that our leaders should feel our pain, should understand the challenges that we're going through. It would be reasonable for the people to wonder, does Moshe really understand how hard it is? Does Moshe know how badly we're suffering? So says the Chiddush Harim, of course Moshe couldn't become a slave. He couldn't literally put themselves in his shoes. He had already run away. He was raised as a prince. But nevertheless, Moshe is told, take off your shoes so that even for a moment, even if it's just for a moment, but at this critical moment, as I'm designating you and putting you on your mission, even at this brief medical moment, feel a little bit of what it feels like to have your bare feet on the scorching desert sand. If you can feel that and understand a little bit of what it's like, a schmeck, a bit, a bissela, a little bit of what it's like to be out in the desert without even shoes, to be in difficult conditions, feel a little bit of that pain. And why is it Admas Kodeshu? Because this land, this sand, this desert, this heat, it has been discouraged, it has been sanctified through the suffering of your brothers and sisters. What gave this land, this desert, Kedusha? The suffering of the Jewish people, which you can now, in a somewhat physical and visceral way, can relate to and can feel a little bit of that pain. That is what gave it Kedusha, and that's what Moshe needed to feel in a very dramatic and real way, even at that critical moment when he was about to start his mission, his shlichus, to deliver the geula, to redeem the Jewish people. So what began when he was a baby, what continued when he left Egypt, when he saw the people suffering, yet again at this critical moment where he's being redeemed, we see this theme reappearing yet again, that the key to the geula and the formation of Moshe and his creation and his career to become the leader who would redeem the Jewish people is focused on, is based on his ability to feel the pain, to truly relate to and empathize with the pain of his fellow Jews. And this all serves, I think, as a beautiful and appropriate introduction so that we can appreciate an incredible, incredible medrash and an astounding interpretation of the Chofetz Chaim. Im lo basi lakan ela bishvil zed dayenu. If you forget everything else, you just have to remember the next sources that I'm about to tell you. They're that powerful, and at least for me, only a few years ago when I first came across them, they made such an impact. I hope it'll make a similar impact on you. But again, instead of just seeing this medrash in isolation, now that we've seen how everything's been developing, I hope you'll truly appreciate what I'm about to share. The Chofetz Chaim has a sefer called Ahavas Chesed. We know the Chofetz Chaim from his book, Chofetz Chaim and Lashon Hara. He's the author of the Mishnah Brura, but he actually wrote many, many other works, none of which are as well known as those two, but some of them are somewhat well known. And one of the ones that's somewhat well known is his book on Chesed, on kindness, on the mitzvah of Chesed and all the various aspects of Chesed, and that's called, the Sefer is called Ahavas Chesed. So there, in the fifth parak of Ahavas Chesed, the Chofetz Chaim addresses the following. And he says, and I'm going to read a little bit of it inside only because I think his words are so powerful. Obviously, we'll develop it, and you'll be able to follow it even though you don't have the text in front of you. But I want you even for a brief moment to hear the incredible words of the Chafetz Chaim. He said, and again, and think not only about what he's describing in times of Mitzrayim, but again, think about how this may relate to the challenges that we're currently going through. Said the Chafetz Chaim, again, this is in Perikei, chapter 5 of his Sefer Avas Chesed. V'hine, ata, now, at this moment, the Chafetz Chaim was speaking even in his own day, midas hadin gavra ma'od al ha'olam. We don't really feel Hashem's compassion. We feel his strict judgment. Midas hadin gavra al ha'olam. Says the Chafetz Chaim, in a time of din, in a time of punishment and of strict judgment, without seemingly being able to feel or see Hashem's mercy and compassion, ein shum eitzel lihinatzel midei tzaros ha'mischadshos yom yom. Says the Chafetz Chaim, there's no other way. There's no way to be saved or to get out of the incredible tzaros that seem to be multiplying and changing every day, day in, day out, more tzaros. The only way, says the Chafetz Chaim, is ma ma'od yesh lihischazek b'midas ha'chesed. The only way to be able to get out of these terrible tzaros is by doing chesed, by practicing acts of love and kindness and compassion for each other. Sh'ayidei ze yis'orer midas ha'chesed ha'elyona. And again, here he's touching on an idea which we're all familiar with in the broader sense of HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world, mida keneged mida. Hashem corresponds in a way to our behavior. When we act in a certain way, that triggers Hashem to react towards us in a similar way, like a shadow, as the Pasuk in Tehillim refers to HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ketzel, right? Just like when you see a reflection or a shadow, right? Everything you do, the shadow does exactly the same, or you see a reflection in a pool of water or something like that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is described that way as well because it's mita keneged mita. So says the Chafetz Chaim, the only way to arouse Hashem's midas ha-chesed and midas ha-rachamim is for us to show chesed and rachamim to our fellow man and to our fellow Jews. That statement was the Chafetz Chaim making about his own time period and the challenges that they were going through of poverty and assimilation and other very difficult things in the Chafetz Chaim's own lifetime. But then, after that introduction, he brings our attention to a number of incredible statements, which again, at least to me, were not previously known. I don't think they're so well known, at least, that relate to the story of Mitzrayim, which is the theme that we've been talking about. And he points out that there's a medrash in Bereishis Rabbah, which says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the following statement. Uma elu shehein ba'atzman tzrichin chesed. Hashem was moved. Those people who desperately need kindness, they desperately need chesed, they need me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to step in, to do chesed to them. Osin chesed im elu. And despite the fact that they need chesed, they're practicing chesed, they're doing things for other people. They need a hand. And even though they need a hand desperately, they're lending a hand. They're helping other people. Says Hashem, when I see this, how compassionate they're being, anish ani malei chesed v'rachamim. And I, Hashem says, who have no needs. My whole essence is to be a bal chesed v'bal rachamim. Alachas kama v'kama shani tzarach ligmo chesed imbriosai. How all the more so do I need to help them. Now this medrash, which talks about how Hashem's chesed and compassion is aroused and inspired by our compassion, by our chesed, this medrash and the quote that the Chafetz Chaim gave is not in any way specifically focused on Egypt and the Pesach story. But again, just we're about to get to that. We're about to hit the final nail with the hammer in a second. But just to make sure that you haven't lost me, where we are is the Chafetz Chaim makes a statement in general about the tzaris in his own time and how we need chesed with each other and Avas Yisrael and compassion in order to arouse Hashem's compassion. And in order to support his contention, he quotes a medrash that's not about Mitzrayim, just in general, a medrash that says that Hashem is inspired when he sees people who are in need, who need their own hand, they need their own help, and nevertheless, they're helping other people. Hashem's inspired by that. And then, based on all of that, here we go, concludes the Chafetz Chaim. He says, now I can truly understand, now we appreciate a different medrash, an esoteric medrash, an not well-known medrash at all, one that's included in the collection known as the Tana Debei Eliyahu, a somewhat mysterious or esoteric collection of chazals that are connected to revelations to Eliyahu HaNavi. But in this collection, again, it's a very mainstream work. It's not a controversial work. It's a mainstream work, even, or it's legitimate, accepted work in the canon of Chazal. But it's certainly not well known to the average person. But says the Tanna Dibei Eliyahu the following, and again, let me read some of the words to you because I think that you can only appreciate their power even as I explain it. But it's important to hear the words itself because it's so powerful. This is in the Tanna Dibei Eliyahu in the 23rd chapter. And he says as follows, there was a krisus bris legemilas chesed. There was a covenant that was made that was sealed with chesed. What covenant? What bris? What chesed? So the Medrash continues, ha'inyan kahu, kishero she'en shum eitza lihi natzal megzeros of shalparo. The Jewish people tried all sorts of things, political, maybe guerrilla warfare, undergrounds, all sorts of different things to somehow get out from under the oppressive thumb of Paro. They tried all their hishtadlus, they used all their connections, they tried to bribe, they tried to persuade, whatever the different things that people do to get out of a problem like they had, they tried everything, and once they saw that nothing else would work, they saw that nothing was going to get them out of it. And not only that, it was getting worse. Hashibur holeichum isgaber yom yom. It's getting worse and worse every day. So says the Medrash Ma'osu. So what did they do? Niskabsu ba'gura achas. They got together in a unified way. V'tochsu eitza ma'alasos. And they asked each other, let's put our heads together. Let's think collaboratively. What can we do to help? Everything else we've tried with Paro has been unsuccessful, has been failing. What can we do to get out of this? V'hiskimu b'neim, and they agreed, she'yelchu b'derech Hashem, they recommitted to being better Jews in Benam Lamakom, and of course that's always relevant. And then the message continues, not only did they recommit to the Benam Lamakom, to their commitment to Hashem, v'gam karsu bris yachad, ligmo chesed, ze'im ze'. They committed with each other to reinforce, reinvigorate, and re-energize the chesed, the kindness, the compassion, the tzedakah that they were doing with each other. Sh'ayidei zeh yi'orer l'mala chesed shal Hashem yizbarach aleihem u'mimela yivatlu l'besov gzerosav shel paro. They did it deliberately and strategically with an awareness that hopefully if they commit to each other, if they do chesed with each other, if they're compassionate towards each other, that will inspire people. That will inspire Kodesh Baruch Hu to do chesed and have rachamonus on us. And the Tana de Belial was saying something incredible, because the more and more the situation got desperate, the more their previous attempts failed, the more the xeros got worse, it's actually human nature to become more selfish, to become, looking out for number one, to go into a survival mentality, a survival mode. And I'm not now even discussing chas v'shalom, pushing other people down to pull yourself up. That's, those things happen in the real world, but I'm not even entertaining that. I mean, even if you're not necessarily pushing other people down, stealing from other people or hurting from other people to help yourself, but just the ability to say, you know what, I got to worry about me. I got to look out for number one. I'm in survival mode. Desperate times call for everyone, naturally lead people to turn inward. And what the Medrash is taking note of and instructing us to be appreciative of and to learn from is that the more things got hard, the more desperate it was, the more natural it was to only care about themselves. Gufa, that's when the Jewish people turned not inward, but outward. They looked towards each other with greater compassion, with greater selflessness. Greater compassion, greater selflessness, and they help people even more. They double down not on worrying about themselves, but worrying about each other in a hope that would arise, Rachamei Shamayim. And says the Chafetz Chaim in conclusion, Ube'emes kein hi lebesos. And in fact, it worked. This is, according to the Chafetz Chaim, based on this Medrash, if you want to know why did the Jews merit to get out of Egypt, why did Hashem save them? So we know there are answers to this question as well, and we know they were on the lowest level of Tumma, the Memtesh Shari Tumma. Again, but that doesn't answer the question, it begs the question. If they didn't have any merits, then what did they do to get redeemed? So in essence, what the Chafetz Chaim is saying is they didn't have any of the typical merits, but they had one, and one alone, but the one was enough. And that was their love for each other, and their compassion, and their kindness. And he points out something that we can take with us whenever we daven every morning. He says this is alluded to in the pasuk in Oz Yashir. Nachisa b'chazdecha amzuga alta nahalta b'azcha, etc., etc. What does that mean, that nachisa b'chazdecha? We say it every day in the Oz Yashir. So he quotes from another measurage. What is nachisa b'chazdecha? Zu gemilas chasadim. That we're singing when we left Egypt, and we actually are celebrating our freedom with Oz Yashir after we crossed the banks of the Yam Suf and the Egyptians were drowned and we were finally truly saved. The Jewish people themselves, says the Chafetz Chaim, they were aware of what got them out of it. They were aware of how they survived. And what was that? Nachisa b'chazdecha, zu gemilas chasadim. And what chesed are we talking about? Says the Chafetz Chaim, not just random chesed, but a deliberate strategy and a cohesive plan created by the Jewish people to have a bris shel gemilas chesed. Despite how difficult it was, despite the natural inclination to look inward, dafka at their lowest point in the most difficult time, they looked outward and they tried to help each other in that very difficult and very difficult moments. You know, it's interesting. Some of you may have heard this in previous years, or you may have heard this from Rabbanim and Drushas at different points. There's a tradition quoted by the Torah that the three regalim, the three Yom Tovim, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, correspond to the three Avos. It's not exactly clear what the authority or the source of this tradition is, but it exists and it's already quoted, at least by some Rishonim. So of the three, what corresponds to what? So the Torah says that Pesach corresponds to Avraham. What does Avraham Avinu have anything to do with the story of Pesach? You know, ostensibly and at first glance, there's no connection, Avraham Avinu and Pesach. So I saw a few years ago a very beautiful interpretation from one of the Rosh Yeshivas of Lakewood, Rabbi Yerucham Olshin. And he explained, in light of everything we're saying and keeping what we're saying, Avram, we know, what was Avram most famous for? His chesed. Avram is the Omud HaChesed. And therefore, even though we usually, if I would ask people, certainly if I would ask you a half an hour ago at the start of the shir, you know, list, you know, the first thing, the first two or three things, that themes that would come to mind, I've asked you, what are the themes of Pesach? Freedom, Emunah, I'm sure we could come up with a few different things. I'm not sure how many people would have thought of chesed. And yet we have seen that they got into the mess because of a lack of compassion and chesed for each other, as evidenced originally what happened to Yosef and his brothers, the gossiping and the initial selfishness that Moshe himself noticed when he said, Acheinu de Hadavar, now we're in their mess. But we also have seen Zeh Lu'umat Zeh, that if that's how they got into the mess, it's clear that's also how they eventually and ultimately got out of the mess. Starting with Moshe himself, starting with his family in this tiny garin, this tiny seed that was Moshe and his siblings, and the compassion they had for each other, going to when Moshe is chosen at the burning bush, and then eventually to Moshe's compassion for his fellow Jews. Throughout his entire story, we have seen the idea of chesed and compassion and looking outward as being the secret to the geula, culminating in crescendoing in this incredible medrash and this powerful lesson that the Chafetz Chaim teaches us, that the Jewish people themselves, by the time it got to the last stage of the she'ibud, it wasn't just Moshe or a few tzaddikim, but the people at large finally got the message. When we have nothing else, what we need to realize, we need to turn to not only HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but turn outward towards each other, and even in our darkest and most difficult times, we need to help each other. To conclude, I want to mention one or two just final last points, which is, if this is how we got into the mess in Pesach, if this is how we got out of the mess in the original Geula of Nisan in Pesach, it therefore should not come as a surprise that we, and especially since we know there's a famous tradition of Nisan Nigael, B'Nisan Asidin Nigael, that we were redeemed once in Nisan, and hopefully in the future our ultimate redemption will also happen in Nisan. So perhaps that's not just a calendaric statement. It'll happen this month, not that month. But hopefully the same theme, the same idea that helped us have our geula, our redemption from Egypt, will also help us have our ultimate redemption. And if this chesed and compassion and avas Yisrael and looking outward is what helped us get out of Egypt, and that's the medrash, that's the Chafetz Chaim, that's not me, I'm just putting it together for you. So then hopefully this is what will also eventually take us out of our current tzaros, and the tzaros that the Jewish people have been dealing with throughout the gullus, and unfortunately the difficult ones we're having now. I want to end with before I give you kind of a little cute word at the end, but one final message just to emphasize this. And even though I could pick a number of sources that make the same point, I specifically want to quote this last point from the Chafetz Chaim himself. Because if it's the Chafetz Chaim who, Baruch Hashem, you know, where Zocha was the Siyata Shema to learn this incredible piece that the Chafetz Chaim said about what happened in Egypt. So it's also worth being aware of another teaching of the Chafetz Chaim here in his Sefer on Lashon Hara. In the second chapter of his Sefer on Shmiras HaLashon, the Chafetz Chaim says something incredible. And he said, again, I, because of the hour, I won't read it inside, but the words are incredibly powerful. He says, right now, says the Chafetz Chaim, we have no ability to build a Beis HaMikdash. But let's say we could, says the Chafetz Chaim. Let's say theoretically we could build a Beis HaMikdash, and the only thing that was missing, again, this is a hypothetical, I'm not embellishing, this is in the words of the Chafetz Chaim. He says, let's say the only thing we needed to build a Beis HaMikdash was money. We needed to have a fundraising campaign like we read about in Parshas Truma. We need a fundraising campaign to raise the money to build the Beis HaMikdash. Says the Chafetz Chaim, again, and he lived in a time which was much more poverty-stricken than ours. He says, there's no doubt that every single Jew would give whatever they could possibly give, whatever they could afford, to raise the money. Who wouldn't be generous? Who wouldn't give to be able to contribute to help raise the money in order to be able to build the Beis HaMikdash? Everyone would. There's no question. It wouldn't be a problem at all. Well, if that's the case, says the Chafetz Chaim, that if we would need money to build the Beis HaMikdash, everyone would give. He says, the truth of the matter is, says the Chafetz Chaim, ain't tzarech kesef klal. The reality is that we don't need money. That's not the problem. It's not the money to build the Beis HaMikdash. Rather, he says, l'hischazek menachet, that we have to be mechazek ourselves from the sins that got us into the mess. And what's what got us into the mess in Egypt, and then he's talking especially about the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, what got us into all this mess of our galus? Lashon Hara and Sinas Chinam. And if that's what got us into the mess, we don't need money to get us out. What we need is a rectification of those sins. Le'echoz b'midas ha-shalom. To make peace with each other, to make peace with our fellow Jews, to do chesed for each other. And through that, says the Chafetz Chaim, will be zocha to the bias Mashiach and the binyan ha-mikdash. So I want to end, again, I hope the points have been clear. I've tried to be as clear and organized as possible. We saw how we got into the mess through a lack of chesed, through a lack of avas Yisrael, through sinna, through divisiveness, through selfishness, and we saw that Moshe in his career and the Jewish people eventually got out of the mess through a broadening of Avas Yisrael and compassion and looking outward instead of looking inward. Not only did that happen in Egypt, but we hope that that will be our future redemption as well, as the Chafetz Chaim and many other tzaddikim have promised us. And I'll end just with the following tefillah. And I want to share with you something. Again, right now we're not in shul. Unfortunately, we don't have laning. But those of you who go to shul regularly on Mondays and Thursdays know that after laning, after Kriyas HaTorah, the Chazan says a number of Yehi Ratzons, which then culminate in the tzibur, the people in shul in the morning, saying the famous phrase, the paragraph of Achenu. It's only something that happens in shul on a Monday and Thursday in the morning. Mirza Shem will be back in shul and hearing it soon. But if you just think about it for a moment, in those various Yehi Ratzons, we say as follows. The first one we say, please Hashem, may it be your will, Yehi Ratzon, l'hoshiv es Shechina sanu b'mehera. Hashem, please bring your Shechina back very quickly. Yehi Ratzon, we say, l'rachem aleinu v'al pleit aseinu, please have compassion on us and on our families. Then we say, Hashem, please, may it be your will, have compassion, Yehi Ratzon, L'kayim banu chachmei Yisrael, Hashem helps sustain the great chachamim, the great rabbanim. And then finally we say, Yehi Ratzon, that there should be besuros tovos, yeshuos, nechamos, v'yekabetz nidachenu. We say all of this, in all of these times, each one of these things that we ask for is introduced with the same phrase time and time again. Yehi Ratzon, please Hashem. Yehi Ratzon, please Hashem. Yehi Ratzon, please Hashem. And after the chazan does this, what happens? The Jewish people all respond. The tzibur, whoever's in shul, responds. Achenu kol beis Yisrael. We all say together. We want to go from shibud l'geula, me'afela l'ora, from darkness to light, from servitude to freedom. We ask for all the good stuff in Achenu. We all know the song. Don't worry, I won't try to sing it. So ask Rav Shach, the famous Rosh Hashiva, the Panevich Rosh Hashiva. Ask Rav Shach. I don't understand. Where's the consistency and where's the derech eretz in the first few requests that the Chazan makes, Every time we say, please, 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 Yihiratzon, please Hashem, Yihiratzon, please Hashem, Yihiratzon, please Hashem. And then we get to Achenu, where we're asking for all these great things. Afele, Laora, Lashiba, Lagula, all this stuff. But there's no please. How come there's no Yihiratzon in Achenu? Anyone ever think about that before? I never thought about it, and I'm in Shul Monday and Thursday all the time. So says of Shach, an incredible answer, and it's in one statement, it sums up everything we've been saying. Says of Shach, because once we start with the words, Achenu, Kol Beis Yisrael, once we've reminded ourselves that every Jew is in fact a brother, then Mamela, we don't need to say please anymore. When Hashem sees, when Avinu Shabashamayim sees, and what father or mother can't relate to this? When you see that your children truly love each other, that they see each other not as just a bunch of million other people, but see each other as Achenu, said Reb Shach, the Achenu is the please. That is greater than any Yihiratzon, is to see each other truly as Achenu Kol Beis Yisrael. When we truly realize that every Jew, not only the Jews that daven in our shul, but the Jews that daven in the shul we wouldn't go to. Not only the Jews that go, send their kids to our schools, but the ones who go to the other school. All of those people, Achenu Kol Beis Yisrael, said Reb Shach, if we do that, then we can get all the things we're asking for. That is the greatest Yihiratzon. That's how we'll truly get Mitzara L'Ravacha, Me'afela L'Ura, and hopefully, not only this Pesach, but hopefully for all of us in our current predicament, Me'shibud L'Geula. Thank you very, very much for listening, and I appreciate it so much. Thank you so much. Everyone should have a wonderful day. Of course, a wonderful Pesach, and hopefully everyone should stay healthy and as we're dealing with this current tzaras. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.